On February 10th, 1983, we're interviewing in the Red Gym. I'm Laura Smale.
This is about the right distance.
Yes, we'll just... I'd just like to say to begin with that I asked you for this interview because it seemed to me it would be a good idea to have a series of interviews on the biochemistry department and related departments and institutes because of its stature in the university. Also, as you know, the university history is being brought up to date, so all of these interviews have a more immediate prospect of being used than they might otherwise have, which is nice. I'd like you to begin with to talk about, say, just where you came from, when you were born, to begin with, and something about your parents and why you went into science.
Well, I was born in Milwaukee and went to the public high schools. My father was an engineer. My mother was a language teacher. Before she was married and after she was widowed, she taught English to foreigners. This was immediately after World War I. My contact with the university began in 1925 when I enrolled as a freshman in the chemistry course at the Extension Division of the university in Milwaukee.
Could you tell me why you enrolled in why you got interested in science?
It would make some people know exactly what they want to do and others do not. And I was one of those who did not know exactly what I wanted. But it seemed to me that chemistry had a great many possibilities. My contact with it in high school was pleasant and reasonably successful. And it seemed that chemistry offered the possibility of branching out possibly into medicine, possibly into industrial work. So there was no firm commitment, but the doors were left open for future development. The Extension Division at that time was a very small operation. Milwaukee at that time had two larger institutions. One was Marquette University. And the other was the State Teachers College, which through evolution has become the major part of UWM. I wasn't interested in becoming a grade school teacher, and it seemed that Madison was the appropriate place to take chemistry. So the extension in Milwaukee offered a possibility to stay at home. I worked the whole time I was a student, so that.
So you say you enrolled in chemistry. Did you take other courses in extension?
Yes, the courses were. Well, let me describe the place first.
Yes, do.
It was organized after World War I, mainly as a night school. There wasn't anything like the GI Bill after World War II, but there was some effort to encourage veterans to for more training. While in 1925 there were maybe 100 freshmen enrolled in the day school and maybe 25 sophomores.
I see.
So that
one was really very small then.
It was very small. And one of the students there, Jake Boischer, ended up on the law faculty, and he and I had identical courses of study.
That's
so
interesting. He's
people whose interests that diverse were forced to take pretty much the same course of study.
So were you friends?
Yes. What it took was English, French, math, in chemistry.
I see.
So it was pretty much like it would be here. And the teachers were somewhat older. They were not of the stature of the top professors here, but on the whole, the course of study was pretty good.
You thought it was. You felt.
Oh yes. When I came to Madison, I didn't feel deprived. There was some inconvenience because some of the second sophomore courses in chemistry were not available down there, and so I arrived in Madison with more electives and not so many credits in required courses, but that worked out all right.
You know, I've been reading the Cardinals in the 1930s, and I come across articles about extension. So presumably the Cardinal was read in Milwaukee.
Oh yes, the extension division developed. In the day when I was there, all they had was two floors in an office building. And the labs were anything but well equipped, to the point that one time when we were making chlorine, the ventilation system couldn't handle it, and people had to complain in the rest of the building. One wasn't so touchy about contamination in those days as one is now.
You're still alive, so presumably.
Yes, oh yes.
Did you have an esprit de corps among the students at all?
Yes and no. There was almost no social activity. The people who went there were people who were interested in their education, because there was no glamour about the place at all. And students lived at home, but of course, because the group was small, why, everybody knew everybody else. For instance, the teacher in economics apparently did very well in the stock market. This was before 1929.
I see, yes.
I came to Madison in 27 as a junior.
You had expected to all along.
I had expected to all along. Took the required courses. Lived in the dormitories at that time, which were a much smaller operation than they are now.
Where did you live in a dorm? What dorm?
Adams Hall 1 year and Tripp Hall the other. Those were brand new dorms at that time.
The
Lake Shore.
Yeah, the experimental college was going on.
Experimental college was going on, and we were in the other half of Adams Hall. The first unit of the experimental college was half of Adams Hall.
Well, I'd love to hear what you'd have to say.
There was considerable friction between the two groups. I think in retrospect, the strangest thing about the experimental college was that it wasn't an experiment. It was intended to bring a group of typical students together and have them live with tutors and focus on, what was it, Greek civilization the first year?
Yes, that's right, and American the second.
Industrial Revolution. I don't really remember what, but they did not have to go to classes. The group was anything but typical. The sort of students that would be attracted to that kind of a program would be, oddballs, I suppose. Some of them were extremely talented, but they got into trouble.
I'll put this over here, yes. Because that sort of sound goes through the... You say there was friction. How did it manifest itself?
Well, I suppose part of it was prejudice. Some of them had long hair. Then they were accused of not bathing. some of the others sort of, well, they almost got into fights. And there
with
was,
you, with you people?
It was some of some of the regular students, I think, that objected to the experimental ones.
Where would you encounter each other?
Well, the dormitory is a quadrangle, and uh-huh. the dining rooms were...
Oh, so you were all in the same
dining room? All in the same, oh yes, yes.
But they had different tables?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Were you... Each dormitory had its own table?
Each dormitory had its own table. Each unit in the... there must have been something like 8 units in a quadrangle.
Mm-hmm.
What do they call? They called them houses. Yes, we were in.
So you'd overhear their talk.
Yes.
And laughter at the table.
Oh yes.
Mm-hmm. Did
not that there was anything particularly formal. Well, the present generation of students would certainly think that this was outrageously formal, because we had to wear jackets at mealtime.
Oh, did you? It's hard to imagine.
Yes. And the experimental students weren't held to this.
Oh, I see. So that made a big difference.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they wore, what, just shirts and sweaters?
Almost anything.
More
generally
than capes
sloppy,
or...
yes. Mm-hmm. Generally sloppy. No, some of them have done very well. And, the head of the experimental college, Dr. Mickelgen, had 2 sons, and one of them became quite well known mm-hmm. as a scientist. So it wasn't all just literature or history.
So you felt that they were keeping themselves separate. And did they seem snobbish?
No, if there were snobbishness, I'd almost say it was on the part of the group.
I see.
That sort of resented having somebody around that was too different.
So you looked
it
down on them a
bit. It was a little
bit
of that. Oh yes. Mm. Oh yes. That I think that was part of it.
So you didn't think of them as privileged in getting this special treatment and education?
Not that they were getting a better education, but again, this is the undergraduates' reaction that they didn't have to go to classes, didn't have to go to laboratories, they had an easy life.
But that's the sort of thing that one might tend to envy, I should think.
Well, as far as that, yes.
Maybe, but,
by the way, if you get Harry Shuck here,
yes,
ask him about the experimental college.
Good.
He was one of the house fellows, not involved in the experimental college.
Well, that would be
interesting. Was part of the background, or the. He was one of those that was trying to uphold standards.
Yeah. Thank you. I'll do that. Mm-hmm. Well, that's pretty much aside from
yes.
your own career.
Oh, yes.
So go
sure.
on with your. You came here in 1927. How did you finance yourself?
I had worked for a year after high school, and
doing what?
I worked in a newspaper office as in the advertising department, glorified office boy, and
yeah.
I held that same job while I went to the extension. I would think, believe I was at the desk, the desk that was open for people to leave advertising.
Yeah.
That was open until 9 o'clock at night, and I was there from 5 to 9.
Uh-huh.
So that was not a very glamorous or demanding job.
Yeah.
I worked during the summertime, and about, well, that carried me through three semesters. Now, in the fall of 28, when I was a first semester senior, recruiters were coming around looking for chemists, and I was actually offered a job at DuPont.
Really? So you must have done well.
Which I accepted, but of course it was contingent after my graduation.
Mm-hmm.
And then, at the end of the second semester, I was looking for the possibility of some work around here, and the Dr. Maloche, who was in charge of placing students in jobs in chemistry, said there was an opening in agricultural chemistry. It was actually Peterson who was looking for somebody, and when I got to him, his job was taken, but he said, oh, there's a better one with Professor Steenbach. And he took me to Steenbach, and what Steenbach had, what was the equivalent of a full-time assistantship, under which I was able to take 6 credits of coursework during the final semester, and I had to postpone my graduation until the end of summer school. Mm-hmm. And so I worked for Steenbach as a senior, determining calcium
uh-huh.
on a project on the toxicity of vitamin D. Mm-hmm. One of his graduate students was getting ready for his thesis on the toxicity of vitamin D.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the evidences of toxicity is that calcium settles in the soft tissues. So I had a tremendous number of kidneys and livers and blood vessels of rats that had received too much vitamin D. My job was strictly routine, mm-hmm. a chemical determination, but I was part of a research project at that time. And then, about the middle of the semester, Professor Hart, the chairman of the department, offered me an assistantship to continue as a graduate student. So I resigned my job mm-hmm. at DuPont, which I never begun, and continued graduate work with Professor Steenbach.
Now, how did your pay compare at DuPont? And
You see, this was... I think my memory is correct on this. I think I was offered $150 a month.
At DuPont.
At DuPont. And a full-time job in the ag school, this was a very choice job,
yeah.
paid $120.
Oh.
And it was supposed to be increased by $10 a month each year.
Mm-hmm.
By the middle of 1930, the Depression was here, so there was no raise. By 31, there was a 5% decrease,
mm-hmm.
and decreased subsequently. So when I finished my PhD, I was getting less than what I was getting when I first arrived. But that wasn't really as bad as it sounded, because prices had come down,
mm-hmm.
unlike the present situation.
Yeah, yeah.
And most of my associates were on half-time appointments, and so mine was actually better than the general. I really yeah. felt no pain.
Yeah. Goodness, I have a great many directions to go in now. I guess to begin with, when did you start thinking of doing graduate work in chemistry? You clearly hadn't intended to when you were at DuPont.
That's right. But being part of a research program, I knew that I liked what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And my personal contact with Professor Steenbach was very favorable. And I might confess that I didn't appreciate who he was when I interviewed him for the job.
Yeah,
I was not awed, and when I heard later who and what he was, I was almost panic-stricken. And when he, when I once, just in the course of conversation, said I would like to know a little more about what this is all about, he gave me some reprints.
Uh-huh.
And they were full of words which I had never, which meant nothing to me. Anti-rachitic principle, for example.
Yeah,
a chemist doesn't know anything about that sort of thing.
Yes, it hadn't been your field at all.
It hadn't been at all, no. So as a graduate student, I actually had to go back and take biology.
Hmm.
Nowadays, we insist that biochem majors have biology before they graduate.
Mm-hmm.
They have to have biology and chemistry.
Yeah.
And not very much biochemistry.
Mm-hmm.
We emphasize the background courses and still consider biochemistry as essentially a graduate discipline.
I see.
So the requirements for a degree in biochemistry, when I retired a few years ago, were something like 30 credits of chemistry and I don't know how many of biology,
mm-hmm.
and only 8 credits of biochemistry. But this was one very major course, and then the other was, and a seminar,
mm-hmm.
and one other course. But these people were really well prepared for it. And in the, when I took biochemistry, the bio part of the biochemistry wasn't nearly as complicated as it is today. And a background in chemistry was adequate.
Uh-huh.
The only point was that Steenbach's program and Hart's program all involved animals, and much of the work was compiling diets and feeding the animals, and then determining how well the animals grew or failed to grow.
Your work as a research assistant.
Yes,
Well, could you describe your interview with Steenbach? Do you remember it?
Oh, yes, very well.
It would be nice to know how
a
young man. You were a senior. You were just a undergraduate.
I was a senior, and I was taken down into the animal room, and Professor Peterson introduced me.
Uh-huh.
And Steenbach and Peterson said that Maloche had recommended me. Steenbach sometimes had a rather strange way of approaching people. And he said, "Are you any good?"
Good.
And what does a kid say to that?
And
I said something to the effect, "Well, my grades are all right, but I don't know how much that amounts to here."
Uh-huh.
And she said a few other things, and that was it.
Huh.
But
did he ask
perhaps a more critical interview was sometime later, after he had given me reprints, which I couldn't understand.
Yes.
And I told him that I was afraid he was assuming more than because I really didn't understand this. And he sort of said, "Oh, don't worry about it." And the following fall, when he started me out on vitamin A, which was one of his two major lines of work.
Yes.
He was, his first important single piece of work was on vitamin A, the relation between yellow pigments and vitamin A activity. That was a very important discovery at the time. And he was still, that had been made in 1919, and he was still continuing on that problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the meantime, he had been working with Professor Hart on calcium and phosphorus. That ultimately led to vitamin D and the irradiation work.
Mm-hmm.
And the key finding there was made in 1924. And the patent on that is the basis of the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation.
Yes.
So I arrived in his lab 5 years after the key finding on vitamin D, and most of his research was on vitamin D, and there wasn't anybody else on vitamin A. I was pretty much on my own on vitamin A.
Now this is when you started after you graduated.
Yes.
At what point did you decide to take graduate work?
Pretty much when Professor Hart offered me the job, when he offered me the assistantship.
It isn't that either of them said to you, you ought to go to graduate school.
I think it was almost implied. I don't remember anybody ever saying this.
Mm-hmm.
I must say that as an undergraduate, I was not as well aware of graduate work as many other people were. And at the chemistry fraternity, I became much more aware of what was going on, there were people who were, there were in this fraternity, about a third of the members were graduate students.
Goodness, tell me about that. I don't know anything about it.
Oh, well, there is a fraternity still in existence. It was on Lake Street at that time, which had dormitories and dining facilities, and this was for chemists.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike most of the fraternities on the campus, this one had a strong element of graduate students in it. And these were people not in agricultural chemistry, but in chemistry itself.
Mm-hmm.
Teaching assistants, mainly, in majoring in organic chemistry or in physical chemistry. And of course, the chemistry department had a great need for laboratory teaching assistants, because large freshman classes in many laboratories.
Yeah.
And so graduate students were paid to help teach these laboratories, and they themselves then were working on a research problem, usually in some other department in the chemistry building.
Mm-hmm.
And organic chemistry was the largest unit, and physical chemistry was very popular. Analytical was another one. And so this example of what could be done made me realize that that was a good thing to do.
How did you, did everybody automatically get into this fraternity?
No, one was asked.
You were,
but you had to be, you had to be enrolled in the chemistry department.
And did you get asked as an undergraduate?
As an undergraduate, yes. But so you see, I arrived as a junior.
Yes.
So I was only there for 1 year. You see, most people who are members of fraternities join them in their freshman year.
Yes.
And then they spend several years there. I came relatively late because I was not part of the Madison scene.
And did you, and you lived there in this,
I didn't live there until I was a graduate student.
And you were allowed there as a graduate student even though you were in biochemistry?
Oh yes, biochemistry, that was...
It was for both,
yes.
All chemists.
Mm-hmm.
It must have been
you see, chemistry, There was also a Department of Chemical Engineering in those days. Mm-hmm.
And
they
and
were
they
part of the chemistry here. I don't know what you'd call it.
Brotherhood or
yeah, something of that
not
sort.
Not a sisterhood, I don't suppose.
No,
there were
not in those days.
Although there were,
in my graduating class, undergraduate, there was one girl who was a chemist.
Mm-hmm.
But it was pretty much a male operation. Mm-hmm.
So this was an honor to be invited into this, you called it a fraternity, is that right?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And you ate there.
Yes.
And talked together about.
Yes.
So were there other, do you know, were there, did the other disciplines have?
These were professional, so-called professional fraternities.
Mm-hmm.
In contrast to the social fraternities.
Mm-hmm. Were there many of them?
Not very many. There were others. The pre-med, for example, had one.
Again, you were saying that it was a national.
It is now a national fraternity with chapters in just about every state. It was founded here at Wisconsin. Wisconsin is the so-called Alpha Chapter. And it was Professor Matthews, the head of the department, that was instrumental in getting it started. I suspect this was done very shortly after World War I, but it may be a little older than that.
It's recording all right, it's just mm-hmm. I can see that you would, the association with graduate students would make you think of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would like to ask you a bit about the chemistry department at that period, who your best professors were, whom you admired and
mm-hmm. I think the ones that really rated were the people in organic chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
Professor Atkins was very excellent and very imaginative and had a big research program.
Mm-hmm.
McIlvaine also was one of the lights. In physical chemistry, Matthews was the chairman but was not so highly regarded.
Mm.
He was terrific as a chairman and in getting funds for a wing for the building, and that sort of thing. But he was more interested in old photography and scientific crime detection than the latest wrinkles in physical chemistry. And Daniels was, Farrington Daniels was the second man there, and he was the physical chemist.
Mm-hmm.
And Williams was the third one. So we had, we
Did
were exposed
with,
to all the,
Williams?
Williams gave some of the lectures, and I took, later on, took one advanced course given by Daniels and Williams.
Mm. And you know that I've interviewed Williams.
Yes.
How was he as a teacher?
He was very good. At least we thought so, because Matthews was not so good.
Mm.
He actually read out of the textbook, and that was something of a
flawless
scandal. And Williams, speaking on his own subject, was very effective.
And Daniels?
Daniels was not a brilliant lecturer, but very clear and worth listening to.
Mm.
The real star personality was Louis Kahlenberg. He was still teaching the history of chemistry when I was an undergraduate. And he was teaching chemistry to engineers. And he had very original ideas and objected to some of the newer theories which
yes,
the
that's
others,
what I've heard about.
Yes, and in a way, it was a sort of a tragedy because as a young man, Colin Burke was very well regarded
as a
scientist. And the theory of, what was it, electrolytic dissociation was really propounded on very flimsy evidence. Mm. And Colin Burke opposed it, and he was correct in pointing out the deficiencies at the time, but subsequent evidence proved the theory to be correct, and he never accepted it. So there was, he was actually removed as chairman during World War I.
But still allowed to teach.
Still allowed to teach. And he was one of the old-fashioned theatrical type of lecturer.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept his students awake. There was just no doubt about it.
Yes, in chemistry, that would be a feat.
Yes, it takes something of a performer.
I mean, to be a dramatic lecturer.
But in his day, there was a man by the name of Snow in physics who was also a performer.
Oh.
Sometimes accused of being a clown.
Uh-huh.
In history, there was Carl Russell Fish.
Yeah.
And in economics, what was his name?
Oh, Kiekhofer.
Kiekhofer, yes. So there was a group of that type of lecturer and performer. And Colin Burke was really the last of that breed.
Mm.
K.P. Link was a little bit like
was
that.
Was he?
Yes. He was a performer.
Huh. Well, I want to stay with your undergraduate
yes.
work a bit. You did take other courses, presumably, besides chemistry.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
What?
We had to meet the... there was something called the chemistry course, and this was in the College of Letters and Science. And we had to meet all the requirements of the College of Letters and Science
mm-hmm.
and take a good deal more chemistry. So we had 130 credits when we graduated in compared to the 120.
The humanities.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had the amount of language. We had to take French and German as chemists. And I took more German, I took English literature, economics.
Did you, at that time, were you enjoying your education generally, or were you concentrating on being a chemist?
I found the other courses easier.
Uh-huh.
And, for instance, when I lived in the dormitories, a friend of mine an English major was taking a course in Eugene O'Neill, of all
yeah.
things, and I read all the plays that he did.
Oh, I didn't like that. I mean,
this was just
yeah.
entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I don't say I look down on humanities, but they aren't as demanding
mm-hmm.
as science is. Now, I haven't made the grade as a professional in the humanities, so I shouldn't talk. But at least at the undergraduate level, I never had any problems.
Yeah. There were two important things going on at that period. One was Glenn Frank's presence, and one
yes.
was the union. I mean, I'm sure there were others, but there.
Yes.
I'd be interested how conscious you were of Frank as a president. And
oh yes, we were conscious of him. He was quite an orator, and we thought he was pretty good. Some of the professors didn't think so.
You knew this then, or only later?
We knew it as graduate students because the professors talked to each other
uh-huh.
and we heard what they said. I think among some of the scientists it was, he was a little too glib.
Uh-huh.
I've heard him called the great liberal. I just came across that phrase the other day. It was.
And there was also, I suppose, to a group of Midwesterners from modest backgrounds, which included most of the professors I was in contact with, somebody coming with spat. I know, but he had adopted Eastern way of life and this business of traveling in a special compartment when he went to Chicago, where everybody else just took the coach. It was that kind of thing, I think, that was frowned upon.
Yes.
On the other hand, his ability to talk his way out of almost any situation was envied. There's one of the sports columnists, Roundy, if you run into him. He was the grammarless journalist and was something of a comic character. And when he interviewed Glenn Frank, this was really a circus.
It was published, was it?
Oh, yes. Oh, of course.
Interesting. What about the building of Memorial Union? Were you involved in student affairs to that extent?
No, we were. We paid for the union, and we didn't. We used the union really during the summer when other eating places weren't available.
Mm-hmm.
The people in chemistry, the graduate students, used to eat their evening meal and go back to the building, quote unquote, and do their studying and some experimental work.
Mm.
Very often in organic chemistry in those days, you had to heat something for a long period of time, or reflux or something, and this could go on while people were doing their studying.
Yeah.
We in biochemistry were expected to keep very strict hours. We started at 8 and we had to be there until at least 4:30. And we were supposed to be in the laboratory except when we were away for classes. And that was all.
And
for Saturday morning was a work day.
Mm-hmm.
And those of us who had animals were expected to look in on them on Sunday.
This was
so that this was almost like maintaining a herd of cows.
But it wasn't. You were working with the rats. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. That was the favorite experiment.
But it was the same responsibility.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The same kind of.
Was this due to? I've gathered Steenbach was a very hard disciplinarian himself and with others.
Yes. Yes.
Were the others in the department?
Like
Hart
that?
And
oh, yes. Hart.
All the same. Everybody.
Hart was always there before 8 o'clock. He lived only a few blocks from the building.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to stop in at the barn on the way to biochemistry and talk to the men who were working there, because he was involved in a good deal of work that involved milk and experiments with cows as well, jointly, and he was more agricultural oriented than the others in the department.
Yes, I want to ask you about that later. But on this particular, and LVM2 and Link, did they all come? I mean, those are very grueling hours.
Oh yeah, well, they didn't seem so grueling to us. Compared to students not in, the chemists, I really don't know about Saturdays, but I think many of them went back on Saturdays.
Uh-huh.
And they certainly spent their evenings as well.
Yeah.
So this...
But the faculty too. I mean, you said
not,
the faculty
not
were
regular.
There.
Well, the faculty were there all day in their yeah. offices. That, yes.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of somebody having office hours for 2 hours on Tuesday and Thursday mm-hmm. Simply wasn't
and
the way
started,
things were done.
You could go in any time and talk to them.
There weren't that many students.
Mm.
The whole total graduate students in biochemistry, I suppose, weren't more than 25 when
oh.
I was started out.
Uh-huh.
And that increased gradually.
But there were also the other, the assistants. What was the relationship between the research assistants and the graduate students?
Well, the research assistants were graduate students.
Well, Evelyn Van Dorn.
Oh, there were, yes. This was, part of the experiment, agricultural experiment station arrangement that I referred to the
yes.
last time I was here. That the College of Agriculture had funds which were ostensibly for the experiment station. But no station existed. The station was the faculty of the College of Agriculture.
Huh.
But the funds then, there were funds then for assistants who were somewhat different from university assistants.
How many of them were there?
There were not very many. I don't suppose, well, Professor Steenbach had two when I arrived, and Evelyn
oh.
was one of them. Hart had, I don't know whether he had one or two, or whether he had some of the teaching assistants.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know mm-hmm. how this was arranged in those days.
Mm-hmm.
But there were a few people who were not degree candidates, really, but they were allowed to take courses.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it took 2 or 3 years or more to get a master's degree.
Mm-hmm.
And Evelyn was one of those.
Of course, she had a Squibb fellowship, which
yes.
would not have. So
yes.
she wouldn't have been one of the experiment station
uh-huh.
funded.
Well, maybe I was wrong, but in that case, Steenbach had only one. There was one girl who was employed to take care of the rat room
mm-hmm.
and the breeding colony.
And not doing research, actually.
And
just,
not
just
doing
cleaning,
research.
Yeah.
And yes, and she also took care of the animals in his course. He had a course in vitamins where the students developed nutritional deficiencies. And Blanche Riesing was the one who took, who was there every day to see that the animals were taken care of properly. Because
hmm. oh,
after all, it takes, yes, he.
This I thought you were saying that the students developed vitamin deficiency.
Oh, no. The animals,
yes.
yes. Yes, each student had, one student had a deficiency of vitamin A and
yeah.
another one of vitamin B
yeah.
and maybe a mineral deficiency. And so this was a very small group of people, but everybody had some animals which were his. It was usually only a pair of animals, but
mm-hmm.
one got the feel of how these things were done. Of course, those of us who were working with animals on our own research problem had a chance then to work with some other deficiency. See, I was working on vitamin A, so
yeah.
I would have maybe had animals deficient in vitamin D, or let's say phosphorus deficiency or
mm.
something else, iron deficiency.
Yeah.
And then the student who, now I'm now talking about the vitamins course, and the student who had a given deficiency also was supposed to read up on the background of this particular phenomenon, read the published papers on it and write a report on it. So one had a little greater exposure to something other than his own research problem as a graduate student.
How well, as a graduate student, did you get to know Hart, Elvium, Link?
Link was the most approachable. Elvium wasn't even there when I arrived. Elvium was in Europe at that time on a Rockefeller Fellowship, postdoctorate fellowship. And he came back later. But we had one office for graduate students, and the professors would come in and talk to their own students, and the rest of us knew what was being said. And we were all in the same, Hart and Steenbach's people were in the same chemical laboratory as well, so I saw Hart every day.
Did you become friendly with him?
Reasonably so, yes, and later on, very friendly. When he first approached me on an appointment, I didn't—I hardly knew who he was because two of us were in a small lab next to Steenbach's office, and we were running routine analyses, and we really didn't have contact with anybody else. This was as undergraduates working in biochemistry.
Oh, I see. But you did. You said Link was approachable. I mean, as a graduate student, did you?
Yes, he had something of the temperament of an actor, and he used to speak in a very loud voice and make clever remarks, and everybody heard them, and there was give and take with him from the beginning.
So he was
he was younger than the others, and he was fun. And while we took his carbohydrate course, he, by the way, had arrived from Europe with special equipment which he bought with his own funds, and he set up micro equipment which was more advanced than anything that chemistry had.
And you mean when he started to teach there, or when he went over sometime?
When he went over as a postdoctorate, he came back. He already had a professorship promised him, and he bought this very special equipment and introduced it. And his problems were, the problems which he assigned to students were at least as advanced as those which were going on in the organic chemistry department. There was a period of years when I believe he could have had any graduate student that he wanted. The students were willing to work for him. He was very demanding in terms of chemical technique. And he was much the better chemist of the group that were there when he arrived as a young professor.
I see.
After all, Hart was quite a bit older. Steenbach's training in chemistry was also out of date. He got his degree in 1912, but it took him 8 years. He was the first PhD from the College of Agriculture. And
yeah, it's all right.
Yeah. Peterson was the other. Peterson was the chemist interested in microorganisms, and he worked with E.B. Fred, and he was actually housed in Agricultural Hall with the bacteriologists. But some of his students were biochemistry students, And he ultimately was full-time in biochemistry. W.H. Peterson.
Yes. Tottingham.
Tottingham was the plant chemist. And he was not as successful as the others.
Didn't stay long.
He died rather. He was the first one of the group to die. Don't know how old he was at the time, but he died shortly after the war, I believe, or during
yes,
the war.
And Babcock was there around, wasn't he?
Babcock was still alive when I arrived. And he was fooling with a physics problem, trying to produce a high vacuum, and had some ideas on motion. And my first, I was ribbed an awful lot for this, because my first lab partner was Babcock.
Huh.
There was a little laboratory in the basement which was not being used, and when I started to work on vitamin A, I was assigned a desk down there, and on the other side of the desk was this piece of apparatus which Babcock had, and he used to come in every day and look at it and fool around with it a little bit. But he must have been high in the 80s at that time, and he was really an old man. And
so nobody took him seriously?
Well, he was sort of a... yes and no. His physics wasn't... Well, we didn't know, but I found out later that the physicists did not take this seriously. But he used to visit the other professors, and they treated him very respectfully.
Yeah, well, of course. And you, how did he talk to you?
Not very much, no. No, he was hard of hearing by this time. And no, he didn't pay any attention to me. He was, had his own ideas.
Yeah.
I guess when he resigned his professorship many years before, he wasn't too anxious to teach, and he certainly didn't like administrative work. But they just kept him on, let him do what he wanted to.
Well, I want to go back to what you said about link, because I didn't quite understand it. You said that, what did you say? Before you said that he could have had any student he wanted, you said something about, which implied that he could have been in the chemistry department.
Yes, he actually, I think he would have liked to have been a professor of organic chemistry.
I see.
And he did have some students later on who took their degree in organic chemistry, but who did their research with him. Homer Adkins allowed this.
I see.
And one of them ended up in the Rockefeller Institute.
Was that Harry? No, it wasn't. Who was it? I mean, Harry, there's a Harry Schneider, is it?
Oh, no,
but
Schneider.
He was a Steenbach,
yes,
right?
Yes, he was one of the Steenbach people. No, I can't recall.
Well,
that. Yes. But he was a very able scientist who knew what he wanted, and he liked Link's research setup better than what was going on in organic chemistry. And yet he didn't want a degree in agricultural chemistry, so he was allowed. He met the course requirements, took the examinations in chemistry, and his minor then was biochemistry. Most of the people my generation and later majored in biochemistry and took minors either in organic chemistry or physical or physiology was a very popular one.
Was there a difference in status between the chemistry department and the biochemistry department? Agricultural chemistry?
Oh, yes, there was, I would think so, yes. And yet, the chemistry department, particularly organic, was one of the better ones in the country. If there had been the kind of ratings as systems as there are now, it would have been one of the top five, I suppose, certainly one of the top 10. And Wisconsin, in biochemistry, particularly in agricultural chemistry, was right up there. One, two,
well, that's
three.
It. That's why, yes. I wondered why.
So, but still, the pure chemists were somehow, maybe a little bit like the mathematicians are a little more intellectual than the people in physics, and maybe physics rates a little higher than.
Well, would it be like economics?
Bacteriology.
Economics, or?
Maybe I don't. I'm not enough familiar with that. Let's say with the status of these two, but there was a great deal of joking among the younger generation about the pure chemists.
I see.
Because, the comment was some of them weren't so pure. But
they were supposed to be doing not applied chemistry, is that
exactly,
right?
Exactly, exactly, yes.
So when Daniels did something like solar energy, and that was applied.
That's right. His lectures were full of mathematics and
more so
reaction rates and all that sort of thing, calculus. And,
then why wasn't Link a member of the chemistry department?
I really don't know. His degree had been in agricultural chemistry.
Oh, it had, so I see.
He had done some fairly good work rather early in life. He had isolated something out of onions, which had something to do with disease resistance. But it turned out to have been something of a freak. There aren't many substances like that. Mm. But that was his first claim to fame that attracted attention outside. Madison.
He came to work sometimes in shorts, I understand.
Oh, he wore an outlandish costume always. Big flowing ties and long hair, and people thought that saw him on the street.